Welcome back, everybody. Today, we're really going to dive deep into project-based learning, or as everyone calls it, PBL. We got some great sources here that explore how PBL, paired with authentic assessment, can really help students engage deeply with their learning. So, are you ready to discover how to ignite those aha moments? I know I am.
Absolutely. I think one of the most fascinating things about PBL is that it flips the traditional classroom model on its head. Students are actively using their knowledge and skills to tackle real-world problems instead of passively absorbing information.
Exactly. And that active engagement is so crucial, right? Seeing a lot of emphasis in these sources on the difference between just assigning, like, quote, projects and true PBL.
Yeah, that's a key distinction. Often people use those terms interchangeably, but there's a subtle but powerful difference. A traditional project might involve making a solar oven after learning about heat energy. It's demonstrating what they learned. With PBL, that project becomes the learning experience itself. Imagine challenging students to bake a cookie using only the heat of the sun. That's PBL.
I see what you mean. It's not just about showing what you know, it's about applying that knowledge to solve a problem. And that makes it so much more engaging. You're not just memorizing facts, you're actually using them to figure something out.
In the cookie baking challenge, students would need to ask questions, do research, experiment with different designs, and iterate based on their results. That entire process becomes a journey of discovering and understanding heat energy.
So it's not just about the final product. It's about the learning that happens along the way. And that's where I'm seeing this idea of formative assessment come in. It seems PBL really relies on assessing for learning rather than just assessing what they know at the end.
And it's so crucial in PBL because it allows teachers to guide and support students throughout the process. Instead of just grading a finished project, teachers are using formative assessment to understand where each student is on their learning journey and provide the support they need to move forward.
So it's like having a roadmap for each student, and the teacher can help them navigate the path.
I'm seeing all sorts of interesting formative assessment techniques mentioned in these sources. Things like exit slips, class discussions, even graphic organizers. It seems like there are so many ways to make student thinking visible.
Take the KWHL chart, for instance. It's a simple but powerful tool that helps students think about what they already know about a topic, what they want to know, how they'll find out, and what they ultimately learned. It's like scaffolding their inquiry process.
And that's such a great way to keep students engaged and accountable throughout the project, right?
Exactly.
It's not just about that final presentation or product, it's about those small steps along the way.
Precisely. And there are so many other techniques that teachers can use: regular check-ins, project logs, even short quizzes.
Not as a gotcha moment, but as a way to check for understanding and adjust instruction accordingly.
It's all about feedback and guidance, right? Not just for the student, but for the teacher as well. It helps them see where the gaps are and tailor their teaching to meet those needs.
And don't forget about peer feedback. Using structured tools like warm and cool feedback forms, where students highlight what's working well and what needs improvement, can be so powerful. Students learn so much from giving and receiving feedback from their peers.
Okay, so we've talked about formative assessment as this ongoing process of supporting students during a PBL experience. But what about evaluating their learning at the end? What does summative assessment look like in a PBL setting?
That's where things get really interesting because traditional tests and grades just don't capture the richness of what students learn through PBL.
I see.
The focus shifts to evaluating real-world products that demonstrate the application of knowledge and skills.
And these sources have some awesome examples. They talk about infographics to visually represent complex information, public service announcements to advocate for a cause, even comics to creatively communicate a story or process. It's amazing how students can showcase their learning in so many different ways.
I love that example of using comics. It's such a powerful way for students to synthesize information, think critically about a topic, and express their understanding creatively.
And it's not just about the final product. These sources emphasize that the process of creating those products is just as important, maybe even more so.
Students are developing those all-important 21st century skills like collaboration, communication, problem solving, and critical thinking, which are essential for success in any field.
And to really solidify those skills and their understanding of the content, we need to make sure they're reflecting on their learning throughout the project.
Absolutely. Reflection is a crucial element of PPO. It's where students connect their learning to their experiences, identify their strengths and weaknesses, and develop those metacognitive skills that help them become more self-aware learners. And in PBL, self-assessment becomes more than just filling out a rubric.
Right.
It's about students asking themselves, what did I learn? Uh-huh. What were my challenges? How did I contribute to my team? What would I do differently next time?
It's about owning that learning process.
Mm-hmm.
These sources suggest using daily reflection journals with prompts to guide that thinking.
Right.
It can help students consider the content, their effort, and what they plan to do next.
Exactly. Even a simple prompt like, what did you learn today that surprised you?
Ew.
Can lead to some really insightful reflections.
Right.
And then there's the summative self-assessment at the end of the project.
Okay.
That gives students a chance to step back and look at the big picture, their product, their process, their growth, and their collaboration.
It sounds like there's a real emphasis on students taking responsibility for their learning in PBL.
Yeah.
And what about sharing that learning with others? One of the forces mentions presentations of learning, or POLs.
Right.
They seem like a great way to take those reflections public.
Absolutely. POLs provide a fantastic platform for students to shine. It's their opportunity to share their learning journey, showcase their final products, and explain the thinking behind their work.
It's not just about showing off what they created, right?
Not at all. It's about articulating their growth, the challenges they overcame, the aha moments they experienced. It's their chance to demonstrate those essential communication skills we talked about earlier,
yeah,
and to really own their learning.
And I imagine it gives teachers valuable insights as well.
Oh, definitely. PLLs offer a window into student understanding.
Uh-huh.
We can see what resonated with them, what they struggled with, where they excelled, and where they might need more support. It's incredibly valuable for informing future PBL experiences.
So it's a feedback loop benefiting both students and teachers. Now, while we're on the topic of structuring these projects,
yeah,
I noticed the sources talk about different types of design projects.
Right.
There are so many possibilities with PBL.
There really are. One that stood out to me was the example of tackling food waste in the school cafeteria. It's a real problem students can connect with, and it opens up opportunities to explore topics like nutrition, environmental science, and even economics.
I can see how students would get really invested in that, finding ways to make a positive impact on their school community. And the product could take so many forms. A new lunch menu, a composting system, an awareness campaign.
Yeah.
Possibilities are endless.
Exactly. And what's great is that regardless of the topic, the design process itself is so valuable.
Right.
Students learn to empathize with their audience, brainstorm solutions, create prototypes, test, and refine their ideas. Those are skills they can apply in any field.
It's about fostering that creative, problem-solving mindset. Speaking of which, another design project that caught my eye was the idea of designing to share experience and expertise.
Right.
That really taps into student passions.
I love that one. The source mentioned a third grade class where students created ebooks to share their expertise on topics they were passionate about.
Oh, wow.
Some wrote about ice cream, others about off-road vehicles. It was as diverse as the students themselves.
What a fantastic way to celebrate their individual interests and talents. And they're developing those crucial research, writing, and multimedia skills along the way. It's a win-win.
Absolutely. And then there's designing to teach others.
Oh, interesting.
That's a powerful way for students to solidify their own learning.
One of the sources suggested having students create YouTube tutorials on topics they were studying. Not only would that reinforce their learning, but it also creates valuable resources for other students, maybe even in other classrooms or schools.
Talk about a real-world audience.
Mm.
And it doesn't have to be limited to academic subjects. They could create tutorials on anything from coding to cooking to skateboarding.
It's a great way to tap into their passions and showcase those hidden talents.
Yeah.
Now, designing to solve a problem, sharing expertise, teaching others, those are all fantastic.
Right.
But what about when we want to push students further to think about raising awareness or changing behavior?
Those are definitely more challenging, but incredibly impactful. Imagine students designing a media campaign to address a social issue they care about.
Okay.
They could create public service announcements, infographics, even social media campaigns to spread their message.
I can see how that would really empower them to see themselves as agents of change.
Exactly. And in the process, they're developing critical thinking skills, media literacy, and a deeper understanding of the complexities of social change.
So we've talked about these different types of PBL projects and how they can engage students in meaningful learning. But I'm curious about the role of assessment tools like rubrics and checklists. How we use them effectively without stifling that creativity and innovation that's so central to PBL.
That's an important question. It's all about finding the right balance. Rubrics and checklists can be incredibly helpful for setting clear expectations and providing criteria for success,
Right.
but they should be used as guides, not straitjackets.
One of our sources suggested co-creating rubrics with students, which I think is a brilliant idea.
I agree. It not only gives them a voice in the assessment process, but also helps them understand the criteria on a deeper level. They're not just following a set of rules, they're actively engaged in defining what success looks like.
It's all about transparency and shared ownership, and it helps develop their self-assessment skills too.
Absolutely. And it's important to remember that the rubric shouldn't be the only measure of success.
Right.
We also want to look for those intangible gains, the growth in collaboration, problem solving, communication, and critical thinking.
Right. Those are the skills that will really prepare them for success in the real world, regardless of their career path.
Now, one of the challenges mentioned in the sources is the potential resistance we might encounter from high-performing students who are used to succeeding in a traditional system.
That's an interesting point. I can see how PBL might initially feel uncomfortable for students who are used to getting straight A's and having all the right answers.
Because PBL isn't about finding the right answer. It's about embracing the messiness of exploration, iteration, and sometimes even failure.
But that's where the real learning happens, right? It's in those moments of struggle and uncertainty that they build resilience, adaptability, and those essential problem-solving skills.
Exactly. It's about shifting their mindset from a focus on grades to a focus on growth.
Yeah.
And that's where clear expectations, co-created rubrics, ongoing feedback, and reflection all play a vital role.
It's about helping them see the value in the process, even when it's challenging, and maybe even especially when it's challenging.
Precisely. And it's important to acknowledge that this might be a journey for both teachers and students. We're all learning and growing together.
That's so true. I feel like we've covered a lot of ground here, and I'm already feeling inspired to rethink how I approach learning and assessment.
Me too. And in the final part of our deep dive, we'll shift gears and explore some practical tips and strategies that you, our listener, can use to start incorporating these ideas into your own teaching or learning practice. Stay tuned.
Welcome back for the final part of our deep dive into PBL. We've covered a lot of ground from the foundations of project-based learning to the power of authentic assessment and reflection.
Right.
Now, how do we take all of this amazing information and put it into practice? What are some tangible steps our listeners can take to bring PBL to life in their own learning environments?
That's a great question, and it's where the rubber meets the road, right? I think the most important thing is to start small. You don't need to overhaul your entire curriculum overnight. Pick one unit or topic that you think would lend itself well to a PBL approach and just experiment.
I love that advice.
Yeah.
It can feel overwhelming to think about changing everything, but starting with one project feels much more manageable.
Right.
It's all about those baby steps,
Exactly.
figuring out what works for you and your students.
And don't be afraid to involve your students in the process from the very beginning. Ask them what they're curious about, what problems they see in the world that they'd like to tackle.
Oh, that's good.
Tapping into their interests and passions can ignite their motivation from day one.
That's such a good point. It's not just about delivering content. It's about creating a learning experience that's relevant and engaging for them. And one of the sources mentioned using an entry event to really hook students at the start of a project.
Yes, entry events are fantastic for sparking curiosity and getting students invested in the project. It could be anything from a guest speaker to a provocative video to a real-world challenge that you pose to the class. Think of it as setting the stage for an epic learning adventure.
That's a great analogy. It's about creating that sense of excitement and anticipation.
Right.
Now, as we think about diving into PBL, I'm remembering our discussion about those high-performing students who might be resistant to this new way of learning.
Yeah.
What advice would you give to teachers who are working with students who are used to succeeding in a more traditional system?
Clear communication is key. Explain to those students why PBL is so valuable, how it connects to real-world skills, and how it can help them become deeper thinkers and more adaptable problem
And
solvers.
I think those co-created rubrics we talked about earlier can be really helpful in this regard.
Yeah.
When students understand the criteria for success and have a voice in shaping those criteria, it gives them a sense of ownership and control over their learning.
Absolutely. And don't underestimate the power of ongoing feedback. Regular check-ins, project logs, peer reviews, all of these help to keep students on track and provide opportunities for them to refine their thinking and their work.
It's all about that scaffolding and support throughout the entire process.
Right.
Those formative assessment techniques we discussed earlier are so valuable for providing that targeted guidance.
Couldn't agree more. It's about meeting students where they are and helping them move forward.
Yeah.
And just as importantly, remember to celebrate those successes along the way. Acknowledge those aha moments, those breakthroughs in collaboration, those instances of resilience and creative problem solving.
Those are the moments that will stick with them long after the project is over.
Exactly.
Okay, I'm feeling energized and ready to embrace the world of PBL.
Me too.
What final words of wisdom would you offer our listeners as they embark on this journey?
Embrace the messiness. PBL is not about perfection, it's about progress. Be open to learning from your mistakes and celebrate the growth you see in yourself and your students. Most importantly, have fun. When you're passionate about what you're teaching and when your students are genuinely engaged, that's when the real magic happens.
That's a perfect note to end on.
Yeah.
So to our amazing listeners, we encourage you to explore the sources we've discussed, to experiment with these ideas in your own classrooms or learning environments, and to see what incredible things you and your students can achieve together.
Keep that curiosity burning, keep those creative juices flowing, and never stop diving deep.